Hi there, Billy Hindle here, the voice of Alice Dyer in the Magnus Protocol. As part of the Magnus Archive's 10th anniversary, Rusty Quill is hosting a special Magnus Live show at the upcoming Crossed Wires Podcast Festival in Sheffield. Join co-creators Jonathan Sims and Alexander J. Newell on the 5th of July for a new iteration of our live show, Statement Begins, where you can hear fan-favourite statements such as Anglerfish, Red Live, and gain exclusive insights into the creation and history of the show straight from the creators themselves. You can buy your tickets now, including limited numbers of meet and greet tickets, from crossedwires.live or the link in the description of this episode.
Hi everyone, it's Kareem, the voice of Simon Fairchild from the Magnus Archives. Today I'm here to advertise Beck's End, an upcoming new audio drama that will be launching on the RQ network. Beck's End is a folk horror audio drama about isolation, belief, radicalization, and poses the question if redemption is possible. When floodwaters swallow an idyllic English Lake District village, a stranded journalist finds herself trapped in a rising tide of fear. Cut off from the outside world, she begins to uncover horrors both human and biblical, lurking beneath the surface. If this intrigues you, you can support the creation of Beck's End on Kickstarter until the 17th of July. For more information on the show and to pledge your support, visit becksend.com. That's becksend.com. And you might recognize a voice here or there. Have fun and enjoy the episode.
This episode is dedicated to Liesl Frank. Thank you, Alex and Johnny, and everyone at Rusty Quill for giving us Magnus Archives and Magnus Protocol. And thank you, Daenerys Rodriguez, for showing me the Magnus Archives. I love you, and I'm so happy to have you in my life.
Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Protocol. Episode 15. Well Run.
Celia, I was wondering if you had perhaps dropped something?
Don't think so.
You're sure? Nothing small and ticket-shaped, like perhaps... these incredibly exclusive, hardly discounted, barely obstructed theatre tickets?
No.
You're sure? Because they look like they'd be perfect for someone to use, maybe for a second date?
Yeah, nothing to do with me.
So, is that a no to...
I'm just playing. What's the show?
The Pillow Man?
Oh!
What?
Nothing. Very romantic choice.
Is it? I don't really know much about it. I just thought, well, it's cool.
Well, count me in. If only to see your face.
Cool. Sorted then.
Not so fast now. I mean, sure, you could both go and canoodle in some stuffy old theatre.
It's a good place to canoodle.
Or you could hear one of the great up-and-coming music sensations that has currently taken the London scene by storm.
Let me guess. Treasure Man?
Don't be daft. They're taking a break before their tour. No, it's Penny for the Well, actually.
But it is still Luke on the bass, right? How many bands does that go in?
Let's just say that this revolutionary indie ensemble which may or may not also include my incredibly talented younger brother, is playing the Gladstone Arms at 10:30 tomorrow evening, and you are both on the guest list. You're welcome.
I'm sure Luke is great, Alice.
Oh, he is.
But I don't think I can make it.
Anyway, we're going to the theatre.
Aha, but that's the best bit. They're the last ones on, so you can do your boring play and then just swing by afterwards.
Alice.
Oh, come on, it's the weekend. Live a little.
I'm sorry, but I don't think my sitter can stay that late.
Your sitter?
Yeah, there's no one else to step in, so it's a thanks but no thanks from me.
No, yeah. No, of course. So, like a dog sitter or...
A baby. Human.
Right. Sorry. Yeah, that's cool. Babies are cool.
I'll tell you what, though. Give me a bit more notice next time and I'll see if I can't get something sorted. I'd love to see your brother play.
Yeah. Sure.
Anywho, don't mind me. I'm a bit behind tonight. Just ping the details for the theatre later, yeah?
Of course.
So...
And you say I need to do this.
What? What? I said babies were cool.
Hi, you've reached the Sentinel tip-off hotline. If you are calling with information that you believe merits investigation for the public interest, please leave a message with as much detail as possible along with your name and number. If you wish to remain anonymous, please instead leave a 3-word code at the start of your message that we can use to identify future calls or correspondence from you. This voicemail is monitored by dedicated staff that are obliged to report serious crimes to local law enforcement if there is risk of imminent harm to anyone. Please speak after the tone. To end the recording, simply hang up.
Oh, I need to report something. I can't go to the police. You're supposed to be independent and... Well, I've got to risk it. People need to know. They need to know what's happening, what they're doing, and I don't know how much time I've got left. I work as a caterer. I earn private functions, silver service, that kind of thing. It's my own company, and I've managed to build up a decent reputation in the right circles. We get called in for the really high-end stuff. The kind of event where the guest list is so rich that you've never even heard of them. There's a big difference between extravagance and elegance, and we sell the latter. We're not a big operation, though. There were only 6 permanent staff, including myself. We do hire in fixed-term waiting staff and other contractors, but even so, I knew these people. I worked with them for years, and they didn't deserve what happened to them. We got a call a couple of months ago for a fairly small event at Witchwood Hall in the Cotswolds. Apparently, they had a family shoot and wanted us to prepare the game. Normally, that would be pheasant or partridge. We'd just swap it for stuff we prepared off-site, since no one could ever tell the difference, but they were really explicit about it being larger game and wanting to know whose kill they were eating. That meant a lot more prep time and equipment, but they insisted, and at this level, you don't get to tell the client no, just how much extra it will cost. We set up the cooking gazebos during the early afternoon, in the rear of the gardens, on the butler's instructions. The house itself was a massive, sprawling Elizabethan thing with pristine flower beds and prim lawns that ran right up the surrounding woodland. It wasn't usual to be given centre stage like that, but I figured the client fancied themselves a foodie and just wanted to see the prep. Thankfully, we brought the flashy gear, just in case. Normally, you'd expect the shoot to have already been well underway by the time we arrived, but people were only just arriving in their tinted Range Rovers and Rolls. I didn't say anything, but I make damn sure everyone got a head start on the veg and the sauces, because at this rate, it would be a miracle if they would be eating before nine. Another hour passed with a couple more cars trickling in, but still no one had even set out. Instead, I could see them through the leaded windows just watching us work. Finally, after another half hour, I had the house staff fetch the butler. He eventually came out, dour as before, and I told him that unless he knew something I didn't, there was going to be a distinct lack of venison for tonight's venison medallions. He just gave me this look, told me to prepare, and then headed back inside. Obviously that pissed me right off, but what can you do? They paid for the day, so we just hunkered down and looked busy. Finally, as the sun was starting to set a bloody red behind the woodland, the guns came out with their entourage, all tweed, Winchesters and dogs, and in the front of them marched this matriarch. I don't know how else to describe her. This big, imposing, like some Roman statue brought to life and given a gun. I kept thinking of my army days, cooking for the top brass. She had the same eyes, like they didn't see people anymore, just assets and persistence. And if that wasn't enough, she had this huge custom rifle on her shoulder, like an antique elephant gun or something. There was no way it was UK legal. The thing looked like it could take out a jeep, never mind a stag. And it wasn't gilded or anything. It was dull and plain-looking, despite its massive size. And he just knew that this was a gun for killing with, not showing off. It was her domain, and she reeked of power and authority in every sense of the word. And when she spoke, they all listened. She had the guns all lined up, facing us with their dogs at heel. And then they all just stood there, watching the sun set as their staff and security all headed back into the house, leaving us alone with them. That was when I knew something was really wrong. The woman stepped forward with her dogs by her side and faced me with this bright and wide smile splitting her face under her electric blue eyes and gunmetal grey hair. Then she just locked eyes with me, began to carefully load the rifle without looking, punctuating each word with another cartridge. "Are you prepared?" she asked quietly. "As we can be," I replied. But then she raised her hand to silence me, and it was as though she had sucked a gag in my mouth. I couldn't even think of disobeying her. The words just died in my throat. She returned to the group, her dogs flanking the whole way, and her silhouette outlined in the blood-red dusk light. I couldn't make out any of the other faces, dazzled as I was by the light. Then she stood tall and proud and said with just the tiniest hint of anticipation, "Let's begin then, shall we?" As one, the hunters raised their rifles, and as one had leveled them at us as we stood transfixed under our gazebo. There's a very specific feeling you get when you're staring down the barrel at clutch range. First, the world gets very sharp and bright, and then the horizon sort of shrinks around you till it's no wider than the dark hole aiming straight at you. It had been a long time since I'd felt like that, but it was still so familiar. Too familiar. The woman hadn't raised her own weapon. Instead, she called as though directing the firing squad. "Hunt." None of us replied. None of us even breathed. We stood completely still and silent. The only noise being the gentle breeze through the trees and the slight hiss of the red wine reduction boiling over beside me. There wasn't even any bird song. Then I realized she wasn't talking to the other guns. She was talking to us. After seconds that felt like hours, the woman seemed to grow impatient. Finally, she sighed and repeated, "Hunt," before shouldering her rifle, sighting and then pulling the trigger without hesitation. There was a deafening gunshot that stabbed at my eardrums, leaving them ringing, and then a sudden clatter of someone falling to the ground behind me, dragging utensils down with them. I couldn't turn to see who was hit, but I think it was Stephen. He was only 23. I know it was a headshot, though. You don't forget that sound. Without lowering the rifle, she chambered another round and re-sighted, this time at me. She smiled greedily and then pumped her eyebrows just once. Playfully. Hunt. And this time, I understood. Without taking my eyes from her, I reached out and gently closed my hand around the handle of the cleaver in front of me. It shone, pristine and unblemished, ready for its bloody work. And then, slowly, so slowly, I raised it overhead, bracing myself for what followed. The woman grinned widely, her finger caressing the trigger. I brought my hand down sharply, smashing the cleaver into the face of Marcus, our sorcier. He couldn't even cry out as it cleft deep into the base of his neck, his arterial blood gushing out and down into the overly hot pot, releasing a plume of acrid, iron-smelling steam. I looked down at his carcass and then wiped the blood from my brow and yanked the blade free with a crunch before turning to the rest of my staff. They ran. The party ate well that night. All told, it didn't take long, maybe a half hour at most. None of them got far. I caught Deborah as she tried to hide up in a tree. Fair play to her. Almost made it up there despite being in her 50s. Myra tripped over a rabbit hole in the darkness. I think she tried to beg. I couldn't make out the words. The only one who gave me any real trouble was Boris. He was a big guy, nearly 6'5", and that's a hell of a size difference, even with my training. But it wasn't enough. I had killed before, and he hadn't. He hesitated, and that was that. As I was packing up, the woman shook my hand and complimented me. Then, the butler handed me a thick brown envelope. It was full of cash, and a note written in elegant cursive with just one word. Run. I did. Can't stay anywhere too long. Can't stop moving. I keep hearing dogs barking, and I don't know if it's just some pet or... I thought about handing myself into the police, but that just feels like trapping myself in a dead end. So I'm getting out the country. First the Channel Tunnel, and then keep going until I've gone far enough that she can't... Wait. Oh no.
Well run, dearie. Well run. That was...
fascinating. Sit!
Excuse me?
I was talking to the boys.
Can I help you?
I rather think you might. What did you say your name was, dear?
I didn't.
My, we are an odd one, aren't we? And braver than we look.
You're not allowed to be in here.
I was invited. A fine specimen. Strong and different. What is that?
Lady Mowbray?
Oh, that's me, yes. I presume you're Gwendolyn Bouchard.
Yes. Thank you for coming in. If you'd like to follow me. Lady Mowbray?
Oh, of course. Catch you next time, dearie.
No, you won't.
Can I get you any refreshments, Lady Mowbray.
No, thank you, dear. I recently ate.
Of course.
Bouchard. You wouldn't be one of the Cheshire Bouchards, would you?
Oh. Well, actually...
There she is.
Oh my God, it's the guy from the band. Gosh, I'm giddy.
You're not surprised, the way you were flailing about.
How dare you? I am pushing the boundaries of what it means to dance.
Well, I won't argue with that. Pint of water, please, mate. With ice. Thanks for coming, Alice. You didn't have to.
Clearly. I thought this was meant to be a little chill side gig thing.
Yeah, so did I. Turns out that things are really picking up.
Hello? Yes? Is that Glastonbury? Why, yes, we do have a minute.
You joke, but the manager's already added 7 more cities to the Dredgerman tour.
Oh, wow. Fair play.
Cheers, mate. How's Sam, by the way? It's been years since I saw that weedy git.
Same as ever.
Shame he couldn't make it tonight.
Yeah, still, sometimes it's nice to hang out and have a drink, just the two of us.
Oh, I'm flattered.
You should be. And since the show's over...
2 pints of Doombar, cheers.
There we go.
The second time is up. I tried to grasp the air and fill my lungs that burn and rattle full. I can't. There's so much air, but none inside as I go down. Again, the cold surrounds and drags me down. The blue, the black, the weight of all the sudden fates awaiting me below the line of sea and sky. I kick, I lunge, I flail towards the bright and blue and break the third and final time. I know I'm spent. There is no more within me save the salt spun death.
Hello?
Reaches down my throat.
Hi? Hello?
I can't breathe inside me. Coughs.
Listen, I,
and tries to
I don't have
out.
Any spare. Jesus! Are you... Are you all right?
I know. It's done.
Oh, shit! Get off! Get off me! Let go! Oh, shit! Oh, shit! Oh, shit! 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 Can you hear me? I'm calling for help, okay? Just hold on, yeah? Ambulance. Just round the back of the Gladstone Arms near Land Street. Yeah, there's someone. I don't know if they've OD'd, but they're going into a fit or something. Alice. Yeah, wait, hang on. Oh, shit. Shit, she stopped breathing. Yeah, just hurry. Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
Cloudy white, and all the water pushes down upon.
I'm sorry.
Lifeless form sinks down to the bottom. That is not there. No sandy grave below the swell, no rest among the coral and the depths I feared so much. I reached up and overland to claim me still.
The Magnus Protocol is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. The series is created by Jonathan Sims and Alexander J. Newell and directed by Alexander J. Newell. This episode was written by Alexander J. Newell and edited with additional materials by Jonathan Sims, with vocal edits by Nico Vitesi, soundscaping by Meg McKellar, and mastering by Catherine Rinella, with music by Sam Jones. It featured Billy Hindle as Alice Dyer, Shahan Hamza as Samama Khalid, Anusha Battersby as Gwen Bouchard, Lori Ann Davis as Celia Ripley. The Magnus Protocol is produced by April Sumner, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell, Danny McDonough, Lynn C., and Samantha F.G. Hamilton, and associate producers Jordan L. Hawke, Taylor Michaels, Nicole Perlman, Cetius de Raven, and Megan Nice. To subscribe, view associated materials, or join our Patreon, visit rustyquill.com. Rate and review us online, tweet us at @TheRustyQuill, visit us on Facebook, or email us via mail@rustyquill.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi everyone, it's Kareem, the voice of Simon Fairchild from the Magnus Archives. Today, I'm here to advertise Beck's End, an upcoming new audio drama that will be launching on the RQ network. Beck's End is a folk horror audio drama about isolation, belief, radicalization, and poses the question if redemption is possible. When floodwaters swallow an idyllic English Lake District village, a stranded journalist finds herself trapped in a rising tide of fear. Cut off from the outside world, she begins to uncover horrors both human and biblical, lurking beneath the surface. If this intrigues you, you can support the creation of Beck's End on Kickstarter until the 17th of July. For more information on the show and to pledge your support, visit becksend.com. That's becksend.com. And you might recognize a voice here or there. Have fun and enjoy the episode.
Hi, Alex here, founder and CEO of Rusty Quill Limited. In case you haven't heard, there is now a Magnus Archives novel. The Library of Jürgen Leitner is set in the world of the Magnus Archives and written by Nebula Award-winning author Premi Mohammed with our very own Jonathan Sims. The story follows Hugh, a university dropout, desperate to find somewhere to belong, and his new job at an esoteric library. The books he must investigate for the enigmatic Jürgen Leitner are not normal, because the library is not a vault, sealed and silent, but a hive, alive, buzzing, and ready to sting. The Library of Jürgen Leitner releases October 27th, 2026, but you can pre-order it right now in the US and UK from your local bookshop or by using the link in the episode description. If you live outside of the UK or US, you may be able to make an international order for this first publication, but it depends on individual retailers' shipping policies.